Need your daily fix on mixed martial arts?
We're going to kind of recap Bellator 155.
From UFC 198.
Who's who?
Kind of a controversial decision.
And who's not?
I couldn't figure out why, and then it hit me.
Well, don't you fret, because Golden State Media Concepts got you covered. Get your daily dose of MMA podcast. Everything from the UFC, Bellator Fighting Championships, Extreme Cage Fighting, Invicta Fighting Championships, and so much more. Join us as we talk about some of the biggest names in mixed martial arts. We've got you covered here on Golden State Media Concepts MMA Podcast.
All right, now, thank you for tuning in to the Golden State Media Concepts Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. As usual, I'm your host, Tate. And today, I have my favorite number two guy with me, or number one guy, that is. I'm talking to you at our studio in Sacramento, and William is talking to us from the 209, the land of the Diazes, Stockton, California. What's going on there, Will?
209 represent. What's up, everybody?
So you're hanging out remotely. You're down in Stockton, and I'm up here in Sacramento. This is something that we don't normally do, so it's kind of weird not having you in the studio.
Yeah, but it's fine. I like being here. It's nice. I got the Diaz vibes right here. I'm representing. I feel good.
So it's kind of one of those weird, it's kind of a weird week, because with Thanksgiving coming around the corner, it's pretty much been, you know, Thanksgiving holiday for me. And I had the lamest weekend vibe. I mean, it's Tuesday, and I'm still carrying that Thanksgiving weekend vibe over. All I did this weekend was I watched MMA. I watched this weekend's UFC event. I watched King of the Cage. I watched Access TV. I even did a marathon, and where I watched from episode one all the way through, meaning for this season of the Ultimate Fighter, which is actually way better than I had thought. Have you seen any of the Ultimate Fighter as of yet?
I have not. Are they still doing the strawweight division?
Yes, and you know what? It is excellent. I thought it was going to be completely lame. I wasn't excited about it. I like Invicta fighters, but there was more. It was mostly Invicta fighters and fighters that I really didn't know a lot about, and it was just really impressive how these ladies really won it. It's been done really well, and as you're watching this thing, you're getting excited for these people. So I highly recommend you check it out, Will.
I absolutely love women's MMA. I think that in a lot of their fights, if you take it pound for pound, they show a lot of heart, a lot more than I see in some of the male fights.
You know, and that was my big problem with this one. I wasn't expecting, like, some of the fighters, I wasn't expecting them to be as tough as they were. I've seen most of them fight before, but it's like everything was kicked up a lot in the Ultimate Fighter house. And another thing that I thought was weird is I thought the fighters from the first round, you could see the progression as they're getting better and better. So it's becoming, it's doing the marathon has gotten me hooked. So I'm looking forward to seeing who actually comes out with this flyweight title now. So
for me, it's tough to watch those, because I think sometimes the best fighter doesn't win. It's just the one that can handle all the pressure situation. Like there's a lot of fighters that aren't able to be, kind of adapt to that reality TV situation, but I do like how they have fights every week, and that's fun for me to watch. That's what got me into watching the UFC, actually.
I wasn't, you know, I've never really been a big Ultimate Fighter fan, but I found my way of just doing a marathon of it is just the, I mean, it made you really engage with the fighters and you really cared about what's going to happen to them. So, I mean, I really am shocked. But the main thing I was going to, I didn't mean to go off on my weekend and what this Ultimate Fighter, but I was going to ask you, you know, you had a pretty big weekend. What did you do this weekend?
I was running all over the place. I was doing a Spartan race for the first time in San Francisco at AT&T Park.
All right, and I have no clue what a Spartan race is, for the record.
You don't know what a Spartan race is?
I have no clue what a Spartan race is. Never even heard of it.
Have you heard of a Tough Mudder?
No.
Okay, so basically they are these events that are held for fitness enthusiasts who want to do a lot of obstacle courses, do a lot of circuit training, just have a kind of marathon with funner events dispersed throughout it. So it's not, like, I think running and doing a marathon would kind of be boring to me.
Right.
So I like doing exercises like burpees, climbing over walls, doing rope climbs, and, like, just generally just running around in whatever cool format that they can do. And this past weekend, they had it in AT&T Park. So you're basically doing a three-mile sprint across the entire park, all three levels. They kind of divided it really nicely, and it was a good workout. I mean, I was running for an hour straight, just nonstop action.
Now, see, that's why you're in better shape than I am. You know, I'll go. Nowadays, I go to the gym and I try to go to the gym like at least 4 to 5 days a week lately. You know, nowadays, and I try to spend about 2 hours at the gym, but I'm not on your level at all. No way.
Hey, you were running around back in your day. You were doing a lot of big things.
Oh, no, back in the days, I would have, you know, football practice, then go right to the gym for karate and jiu-jitsu and judo and everything like that. Now that I'm a little older, I'm like, go to the gym, I do the elliptical for about an hour, and then I lift weights, and then it's a wrap.
Yeah. for the rest of the weekend, actually, I did similar things to what you were doing when you were in San Francisco. I was experiencing the nightlife there, and that was very interesting.
Oh, San Francisco nightlife is amazing. I mean, for the listeners out there, if you've never been to San Francisco, San Francisco has a little something for everyone. If you want to go dancing, you can do it. If you want to go bar hopping, it's some of the best bars in the country. If you just want to, you know, bar hop and do and hit a lot of restaurants where you get a little appetizers or tapas, there's literally something for everyone. Now, what did you do anything in particular there?
Oh, I was running all over the place. I went to this bar. I wanted to ask you if you've ever been to it. It's like Muck Something Saloon. Have you ever been there? And San Francisco?
I'm not sure. I don't believe so. I've been to a lot of saloons, though, in my life.
I can't remember what the extra part of... it's McTeague's. McTeague's Saloon in SF.
No, I haven't been there.
And that was an interesting experience.
Is that something
there's
that
a lot of partiers out there.
Can you explain why it's an interesting experience, or that's one that's maybe meant for a conversation off-air?
I can set the environment, but there's a lot of things that were off air. It's a super dark, kind of grungy bar, super packed. The smell is very interesting. And there's just, it's hard to move around in there, but whenever you look up and down and all around to the sides, there's a piece of history in that bar. And that was what was really cool about it.
And what was the history? Is there anything that you can share?
Just old-time saloon things. It's kind of like a Western ranch just located in Polk Street in San Francisco. So it was kind of out of the ordinary from all the other bars that are kind of modern and more conservative, if you want to say. This one was just out there.
Yeah, and there's some bars in San Francisco that, I mean, would just shock people. And then there's some really conservative bars. I mean, literally, there's something for every, no matter how weird you are or how conservative you are, there's something to do in San Francisco. That's why I love, you know, I love working in San Francisco. You know, a lot of people always used to think I was crazy to live in Sacramento and drive to San Francisco every single day. It was well worth working in San Francisco. And then I lived there for a long time as well. Now, we're going to change.
I can definitely see the appeal.
Go ahead. yeah, I can, you know, I can tell in your voice that you can see why, you know, why living in San Francisco would be fun.
Yeah.
Now, today we're gonna cover our regular basic topics today, but I thought about doing something a little different here, Will. Normally, I take the lead and I pick the topics that we're gonna cover, and then you follow along. Today, I do not know what the topics are gonna be. I want you to pick the topics, and we'll go segment by segment. The only topic that I want to make sure that we cover is that we're going to talk about the Holly Holm. I was about to say Jermaine Duranemi. Holly Holm versus Chris Cyborg in the third segment. That's the only thing that I'm taking the lead on. So, Mr. 209, since you're taking the lead here, what is going to be our first topic that we're going to talk about? Or what do you want to talk about?
You know what? Let's start off with the biggest event that we could possibly talk about, and this is metaphorically and physically. Let's talk about that Bellator heavyweight tournament.
Ah! Now, see, I was hoping you would talk about this. First off, I'm going to start by saying that this is no heavyweight tournament. Half the fighters are light heavyweights. Other half of the fighters are heavyweights. And all the fighters are over the hill. I hate to say it that
oh,
way.
Oh, yeah.
So
you are correct.
All right. And the first thing is, I've been getting a little, I don't know if they've announced the official matchups, but I know they were talking about Rampage versus Chael Sonnen. They were talking King Mo versus Ryan Bader, which is the youngest of all.
Two for two.
Okay. Then there's Frank Mir versus Fedor.
Oh, yeah. Three for three. One more.
And then the last one is, oh, my God. The other two guys that's in there. Metrion versus... Oh, Big Country.
You are right.
that's officially going to be the card?
I think so. I think they released it a few days ago. I think that's as pretty official as you can get. The one other thing that they may add is another over-the-hill fighter from the UFC.
Who's that?
Shane Carwin has been added as potentially as a alternate. He's vying for it right now.
Listen, I'm going to tell you this. When you look at this and you do a tournament and it's not the same day, I don't think anybody that we've just named is going to make it to the end. There's just going to be too many. You have too many older fighters. and I think that there's going to be some injuries, and the finals are going to be Shane Carwin versus Bobby Lashley or something crazy like that. That's what
I dig it.
Dude, could you see that happening, that you could literally have no one that is listed for this event in the finals?
I definitely could. I mean, the one fight that I have the most faith in, one of the people coming out, is that Bader the wall fight, King Mo fight.
Now, see, and I, you know, and honestly, King Mo would be one of the favorites because he's done it before. He's fought at heavyweight. I think King Mo was too small. When you look at this, I eliminate Rampage as well. Rampage has a big shot, but I watched him fight King Mo as a heavyweight, and I didn't think it was very pretty. So I eliminate him. I eliminate Big Country. Just, you know, Big Country is going to be a big, you know, either land a big shot. I worry about injuries with Mike Mitrione. So if I was going to pick, and this is going to shock the crap out of you, Will. If I was going to pick my winner for this tournament, Fedor. You want to know why?
I'm not.
This is the reason why I pick Fedor is Fedor is a small heavyweight, less chance of injury. He has a lot of experience. I think of him as if he can get past the first round, he could be dangerous. He fights Frank Mir. Frank Mir is super rusty. Hasn't fought. And how long has it been since Frank Mir's fought?
Ooh, almost like 2 years now.
Right. So you have a heavyweight who's rusty. I like Fedor's chance against Mitrione, moving him into the second round. Fedor has a good shot here. Am I crazy on this one?
Well, there's the other part. You're not crazy, but you have him beating Mitrione, who just knocked him out.
Wait a minute. That's a little revisionist history. There was two knockouts.
They almost knocked each other out.
Yes, that was. We never saw who was going to win that fight. They both landed shots at the exact same time, synchronized knockouts, and then Mitrione woke up first. That was the early bird got the worm that day. But it didn't show me that Mitrione was so much better than Fedor or vice versa.
You know how big of a Fedor fan I am. It's hard for
me
to...
And I'm not the Fedor fan. Think about that. You're the Fedor fan, and I'm not the one, and I'm taking Fedor.
It's just hard for me to watch him fight nowadays. It's hard for me to pick him nowadays after seeing some of his last few fights. So, no comment.
And that's that's the reason why I'm taking Fedor. I think Fedor has a lot to prove. He knows a lot of people have been talking about him as being washed up. No one has given him a chance here. I think this is an opportunity for Fedor to really shine. I really do like Fedor in this one. And then, funny enough, it would be Fedor and then the light heavyweight champion. I can't just skip this. Ryan Bader. Bader would be my second favorite to win it.
All right. You talked about people being undersized. How do you feel about Chael Sonnen in this?
It depends on how much juice he's drinking. You know, how much Minute Maid he drinking. That's all I'm going to say. I don't think that he's going to be at a disadvantage. Matter of fact, I think Chael's going to be very tough to handle. The one thing that will even things out with Chael is the fact that he will take a lot of fighters down, and he will wear a lot of fighters out. Once you get, especially these heavyweights, if you can get them down and ride them for a round, that'll take a lot of starch out of him. At that point, if he doesn't get cracked early, Chael will have something to say.
I can see that happening. He's the least over the hill out of all of these fighters that I have been watching. Aside from like the people that are in their relative primes, like Ryan Bader and Ryan Bader.
All right. So now I've given you mine. Who do you see? How do you see it as breaking down? And are you excited for this?
I am actually really excited for this. I was a fan of all these fighters in their primes, I was actually a fan of all of them. I think that they all had something to bring to the table. It's hard for me to choose a definitive winner. I'm kind of going on the flow with this one. I could break down each of these fights that we have here. I would say that Rampage beats Sonnen. I would take Mitrione over Nelson.
Wait.
I would take Bader over Kingsmo.
Start over, because I'm going to give you. You give name the match. You tell me who you think is going to win the match, and I'll tell you who I think is going to win.
Okay. Let's go with Rampage and Sonnen. I am choosing Rampage.
I am taking Chael. The last time I saw Rampage, he was really out of shape when he fought King Mo. Really, really out of shape. The last time I saw Chael, he was taking Wanderlei Silva down and taking all the starch out of him and handily whooping Wanderlei Silva. I'm taking Chael.
Yeah, that's probably the closest I have between all the fights. I slightly give it a Rampage just because of the power and kind of the size that he's going to bring into the fight.
Okay.
The next fight is Mitrione versus Big Country. And I am going to go with Mitrione.
I am too. I don't trust Big Country. I think Big Country is a lot older. He has had a lot of fights. Big Country's biggest issue is cardio and being in shape. I think as the fight goes past, if it goes past the first round, I don't think Big Country has any shot at all.
I see it the same way. I think Big Country's going to be looking for a knockout. Mitrione's just too lengthy, too tall for him, too big for him. And I just don't see it happening for him other than maybe a first-round knockout in his favor, which is highly unlikely for me at the end of his career right here.
Well, Mitrione's one of those guys that is willing to stand there and bang. And so I do give him a chance because I don't think Mitrione's going to keep his distance from him. So I think Mitrione's going to get right in his face and is going to decide, I'm going to launch my nukes and you launch yours and see who lands.
I see some kicks coming from Mitrione. I think he learned a little bit from his Fedor encounter. I don't think he's going to want to swing with someone with a big belly.
I don't know, because, you know, he got snake eyes and still came out as a winner. I don't know if he did learn anything from the Fedor fight. So, all right, but anyway, I agree. All right, we both agree on that Mitrione beats Big Country.
All right, so now we're here at Ryan Darth Bader versus King Mo the Wall. I am going to choose Ryan Bader. I think he's just crisper, fresher, more in his prime, bigger, and he just has the wrestling advantage, in my opinion.
Okay. First off, Bellator should do the right thing with this one. In the first round, it should be a Bellator light heavyweight title match between King Mo versus Ryan Bader, and the winner gets the Bellator light heavyweight title, and gets to move on in the tournament. That's because King Mo was supposed to be the guy fighting for this title next anyway. So kill two birds with one stone. Knock that title match out, because it'd be kind of wrong for King Mo to beat Ryan Bader and then be like, oh, I just beat you, but I don't get the title. But now, you know what I mean? I have to fight you again. So I think it should
be a light.
Well,
if they both weigh in at 205, if they both weigh in at 205, it would be more official, but I don't think that's going to be happening. And that's kind of a different fight matchup for me.
So, I mean, I don't know what, I mean, anything's possible when it comes to Bellator, but I would love to see that.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else you want to say on that one?
Well, who did she pick?
What's that again? Oh, I didn't give you my answer. My answer for that one is Ryan Bader. I got Bader winning that one.
All right. So now we're on the last one. The Twilight fight here with Fedor versus Frank Mir. And this one's tough for me. Man. On one hand, you have Fedor. He's always got that mystique for me. It's just that he's just a little bit past his prime now. But then on the other hand, you have Frank Mir, who is coming off of a suspension himself, 2 years out of the game, working just to get back in. He's probably been training. but not in fight shape. I'm going to have to go with Fedor. I think both of their chins are kind of shot at the end of this, towards the end of this run for them. But I think Fedor is just going to be in more of a fight shape since he's been around for a little bit longer right now. How about you?
I got Fedor all day. And I go back and I look at Frank Mir at the end of his career, at the end of his UFC run. I felt like he got a little too big at the end of his run. He had gained I felt like a lot of extra weight, which I thought he thought was a good thing. But it won't be for a fight like this. I think Fedor will be too fast. He already proved against Mike Mitrione, he still packs power. I see Fedor winning this one kind of easy. And, dude, how reverse is this that the fact that I'm over here hyping Fedor and you're the one that's kind of reluctant on Fedor?
Hey, I haven't hyped Fedor for a long time. I've hyped Prime Fedor, Pride Fedor for a long time, just not most recent Fedor.
I've never been a Fedor guy, but this one I like Fedor in.
Yeah, he's one of the quickest ones in this whole tournament, honestly.
He has light heavyweight speed. He has heavyweight power. There's no one that's there's going to be a lot of guys that are just going to be coming in to really just throw bombs. I tell you, the one person that scares me with fighting Fedor is Chael. I think Fedor could get into a little trouble with Chael. Chael's wrestling skills are very underrated.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Chael is a hell of a wrestler. How do you see, and this is kind of a rumor mill, how do you see Shane Carwin fitting among all these heavyweights here?
Okay. It's weird. You know, you look at, if Shane Carwin's an alternate, I think he will get a shot in there. I don't know. See, Shane Carwin hasn't fought since, like, UFC XX12 back in 1972. You know what I mean?
Did you see his last fight?
No, I did not. How did he look?
Well, it's hard to judge someone when their one boxing glove is taped to themselves.
What was that?
And the other
that
guy. It's hard to judge how good of a fighter is when he's fighting an amateur who can use both, and they're in boxing gloves, honestly. And Shane, for that fight, he actually had his right arm taped up to himself.
Why?
So he couldn't use it. No, that's just a gimmick.
Oh, gosh.
You'd have to watch it. It was very interesting.
And that is why I did not watch it, right there.
Hey, sometimes we have to double into a little of the circus fights order to truly appreciate the good ones.
So watch a lot of, I'm not even going to say that, but you watch a lot of fights in Southeast Asia, Asian area, and you'll get the gimmicks.
Yeah, I'm going to.
As a matter of fact, you're gonna be in Asia and in the next couple of months or so. So you'll get to see some of those live.
Oh, I'm going to see a lot of Muay Thai fights. I'm going to try to do some training myself.
That's
and
what I was gonna
I'm
ask
really
you.
Interested to see what they have there.
I was going to ask you if you're going to do any when you're over there, if you're going to do any Muay Thai training at all.
I think I will.
If you can, it's an opportunity of a lifetime. I would say I would definitely recommend it. It's just a great opportunity. Now, as far as alternates go, Carwin, Bobby Lashley, Phil Davis. Those are going to be the three alternates in my I don't have any facts on that one. That's just my guesstimate. Do you agree that if someone goes out, those are the most likely three guys that's going to be put in this tournament?
Those are some of the best and biggest names that Bellator has to offer, so I would love to see that if they were alternates.
Now, I just don't like the fact that one thing about tournaments I don't like is, especially a heavyweight tournament, is like I said, the injury bug. There's too many injuries that can happen in this fight, and I just don't see anyone completing it. That's my only problem. There's even I've listened to a lot of other podcasts. There's some podcasts that are predicting that the tournament will never finish. They're only giving it like a 60% chance that the tournament actually completes with a true winner.
And let me clarify this. Are they all going to be fighting all at the same time? Like, no. Are they going to be fighting all the same night?
I don't know. There's still a lot to be said. The matchups and what's going to be happening, Bellator hasn't said anything. That's one of my problems with Bellator. This should have been laid out. This shouldn't have snuck out. They should have just laid it out right from the beginning, had a big giant press conference, a big media blitz, laying out the brackets, who's going to fight, everyone speculating. Even now, I don't even think that, it's just the fighters have been kind of leaking who they're supposed to be fighting, but I don't think Bellator has actually announced at all who's going to be against who.
Yeah, there's somewhat rumors right now, but they are good matchups, and I think they're going to go with them. It's just they're kind of keeping everyone in the dark, which I'm fine with. Maybe tell the fighters, though.
Yes, I'm looking on. I went to Bellator's website and just trying to see if there was anything. And like I said, I don't really see much of anything. Let's see events here. Do you even have a? Do you even know when this? When the tournament's going to start taking place?
I have no idea. I'm looking for it myself, and I don't see anything here.
Yeah, like even on their website, there's nothing. Do you see any? I don't see anything that even puts up, when the fight's gonna be. So that's kind of always that's a big turnoff for me with Bellator when you go to okay, here it is.
Oh, so, I think I've seen something too.
That's dated November 13th, which was they announced who's going to be in it.
It says spanning multiple events and locations throughout 2018, the three-round tournament allows for matchups never before thought possible, and will ultimately crown a new Bellator heavyweight champion. So I think it's going to be multiple events.
So they're gonna stretch this out a little bit to make sure. And you know what? I kept saying that Phil Davis and Bobby Lashley and all those guys who Shane Carwin are gonna be alternates. Do not repeat. Do not count out Tito Ortiz for making being an alternate in this thing as well.
Yeah, I can see that too.
All right, so we're going to take a break, and when we come back, you're going to let me know what our next topic is going to be. So stay tuned.
Sounds good.
And we will be right back.
Check out the show built around the women of MMA. From the UFC to the extreme cage fighting, we got the fights covered.
Listen.
It's the Golden State Media Concepts Women's MMA Podcast. The latest news of upcoming fights, discussions of previous matches. Join us as we talk to and about the biggest names in women's mixed martial arts, past, present, and future. When it's the women's fight game, you know where to listen to. The Golden State Media Concepts Women's MMA Podcast.
All right, we're back, and Will and I, and Will's actually in Stockton, California here today, so he's talking to us remotely. But we just finished talking about the Bellator Heavyweight Grand Prix, and we just had a little take on that. We also talked about the possibilities of some alternates, who we thought was going to win. And the unique thing about this episode is I'm letting Will pick the topics of what we're going to talk about, so I really don't have a clue what's next. So, Will, what's next?
All right, let's talk about another big event. This one's actually big in the Asian mixed martial arts scene.
Let's talk about
UFC Shanghai.
Okay, I thought you were going to hit me with some like something with Ryzen or one championship. I'm like, man, I wasn't even prepared for that one.
Hey, they have a good tournament themselves. They're doing a flyweight tournament. Former UFC fighter Kyoji Horiguchi's young guy. He's a champion in Ryzen now. It's pretty interesting, but we'll talk about that later, Dave.
Okay, but I thought you were going to hit me with something Ryzen, and I was going to be a little worried on that one because I am not up on Ryzen. Okay, so how do you want to take this this event in Shanghai? You lead with this one.
All right, so this event has been very interesting in the past few weeks. It's been the event was first billed as Anderson Silva versus Kelvin Gastelum. That has since changed. Recently, Anderson Silva was flagged by USADA for a doping violation. Details have yet to come out about that a little bit more, but they pulled him from the event since. And Michael Bisping, fresh off of his loss to George St. Pierre, felt that he was ready and willing to fight and get back into the octagon and get a win as potentially one of his last few fights in the UFC. So he's stepping in as a last-minute replacement to fight Kelvin Gastelum. How do you see that fight going?
Okay. Do you mind if I go on my soapbox first on this one?
Oh, no worries. No worries. I love your soapbox.
I hate this. I despise this, and I think it's a joke and a travesty. And I bet you weren't expecting that, were you? Here's the reason.
I can see where you're coming from.
Here's the reason why. Okay, Anderson Silva, he gets a doping violation. We don't quite know what it is. But the thing that I know is this. Michael Bisping was just in a title fight a few weeks before in which he was dropped by George St. Pierre and then choked unconscious worse than almost anybody I've seen in a rear naked choke. And he's not even going to clear, like, the medical suspension should be at least 60 days. For a guy who's been concussed and a guy who's been choked out. And also, you have a situation where a fighter's pride has been put on the line because he fought a smaller man who he lost. And, you know, as a fighter, you think like, you know what, I want to show that I'm still good. So you want to jump in there. My problem isn't with Michael. My problems with the UFC. The UFC's job, one of the biggest jobs they should have, is protecting the fighters from themselves. And the UFC is not protecting the fighter from themselves. The UFC is just thinking about their bottom line and saving a card. He should not be fighting this fight. If they said, you know what, we're going to push this event back, but Michael should at least have 60 days with the trauma that he took when he fought George St. Pierre. I don't like it. What's your thoughts?
I got to agree with you. I mean, the GSP fight was on November 4th, and this fight is going to be on the 25th of the same month. So that's literally 21 days and 3 weeks. That's just 3 weeks since his last fight, where he was dropped and lost, and he went through the ringer and you went through a brutal training camp for it, not to mention that. And he was actually served the medical suspension issued by the New York State Athletic Commission. But since China is in under the permission, under the purview of the Boxing Commissions and Mixed Martial Arts Commissions of America, he's allowed to fight. And I don't think that's right. I don't think that at this stage in his career especially, and considering all the damage and all the fights that he's had, he needs to take some time. It's not a matter of I need to get this win back. I need to get back, get my mind back right, which is what he's doing to argue for this fight. It's not about that. It's just about the livelihood of the fighter. It's about his health and the safety of the fighter. You got to reel him back in. And
a fighter, for instance, like Bigfoot Silva, I hate to say this, Andre Arlovski, BJ Penn, there's a lot of fighters, it's proven that a lot of fighters may not look out for their best interests, but the UFC should look out for the best interests of the fighters. And sometimes it may hurt their purse. And this is one of those situations where they should at least give him the medical suspension and this fight should not happen. That's my biggest problem with this whole thing. He's an older fighter who's had the most fights of anyone in the UFC. That meant he's been through more training camps with more sparring sessions. He just got almost knocked out and then he got choked unconscious. The UFC should step in and they should not have done this. I say this is a very bad, and I don't normally, I hate to be on my high horse and everything on this one, but I just think it's wrong. Now, with that being said, the UFC is looking out for trying to save this event. So this is what they're doing. And with that being said, I am going to go for the upset. I got Gastelum winning by knockout over Michael Bisping, and it's going to destroy his leg. It's going to really hurt his legacy.
Yeah, I can see a similar event happening. Kelvin is no joke. Even if he's not fighting at kind of his natural weight class, he's fast, he's strong, he's young.
He's powerful.
He's got a lot riding for him.
And if you look at, Michael knocked out Luke Rockhold, but Michael isn't that powerful of a guy. You know what I mean? He's not known for being this knockout artist. I don't know if Michael has enough power, especially after coming off with a short notice. I look at this as a bad matchup. Even when he was champ, I still would have taken Gastelum to win.
I think it's a bit closer if he has a full training camp and has some time.
Yes, I think it would be much closer, but I would still take Gastelum.
I wouldn't if Bisping had some time and on a full training camp. I think it's close, but I'd take Bisping by a decision. Right now, I have him losing by a knockout or a TKO.
Now, is there anything? What's your thoughts on this card here?
Honestly, it's a weak card. It's a weak card, and that's why the UFC had to step in and kind of take it from a promotional point of view. And I think that's why they kind of looked away from fighter safety and set up this fight. I mean, they could have set up someone like Derek Brunson and fight in for a late-minute replacement and paid him more. I mean, you pay him accordingly for stepping in and doing that. You look down the list of the top 10, there's plenty of fighters there that could have been kind of taken out of their fights and put into this event, but they needed someone with a name. They want to have success in Asia, so they're doing a lot to kind of rescue this event. There's some fights that I'm really interested in and some fighters that I'm really interested in, such as Bruce Leroy, Alex Caceres, he's fighting on this card, and then you have Lee Jinglan, who is one of the better prospects for Asian mixed martial arts. But aside from that, you're looking at a relatively sparse card in terms of names. Most of it's going to be it's kind of relegated to UFC Fight Pass for a reason.
Now, this is where I go into a conversation I've had with you a number of different times. This past weekend's card and this week's card is a great example of why the UFC should adopt the new Tate system. And what the Tate system is, I've never said this on air, but I've said this to you. The UFC should go through, they shouldn't add any more divisions, but I think the UFC should have a UFC champion. I think they need an American champion, which is a champion of the Americas, meaning North America, South America, and then a continental champion. And what I mean by that is a continental champion would be the champion for Europe, Asia, Australia, and Africa. And that way the UFC could add two additional champions to each weight class. The continental champion would defend his title against other people in Europe and Asia and Africa. The American champion would defend his title against other fighters in North America and South America, but they're not the world champion. It's kind of like in a WWE where they have like the Intercontinental champion or the United States heavyweight champion. It would give them a chance so that they would have additional belts for events like this. So then you would have, you know, you could put two champions on this card that may not be world champions, but they may be continental champions. What's your thoughts on that, Will?
I like it. You're taking a book out of the WWE's book. I do like that idea. It's just, it has to be executed right for me. I mean, right. You have to, like, I have to, as a fan, I'd have to have the understanding, as a fan and as fellow fighters look upon this and see all this, like, champions and whatnot, they have to have an understanding that there's levels to this game, right? They have to understand that some of these champions may not be at the same par and the same level as the main champions, if that makes sense. Or else there's going to be a lot of disputes and there's going to be a lot of calls for equality among fighters, when mainly this would be a promotional tactic.
Well, I think you could still make it so that the different lower titles, everyone knows that the world title is the top title. And then,
yeah, that's what I would have to see from this.
Like I'll use the strawweights as an example. You know, you got Rose Namajunas as the women's flyweight champion, but let's say you have the North American champion is Carla Esparza. I mean, the American champion is Carla Esparza, and let's say, I don't know, one of the European fighters as the European champion or the continental champion. They would still be able to have big time matches. They would still be able to contend for the world title, but they would also have a minor title as well.
You know, well, the thing is, the ranking system is already kind of wonky since they've introduced it. A lot of times you have fighters leapfrogging over the others. So I would have to see them kind of use that system properly, in a sense. And then if they were able to do that, then I think I would be a fan of, like, the Intercontinental type of champions. You mean you have, like, you'd have, like, the European champion, you want a champion versus the American world champion, Rose Namajunas, and then I would be fine with that.
Like where's Jimmy Manawa from?
Jimmy Manuel, he's from the UK.
Right, that's what I was thinking. So, like, for the, let's say, you're talking about UFC, you know, UFC Fight Night London. I'm making this up. So you would have Alexander Gustafsson defending the continental title versus Jimmy Manuel. You know, that can be a Fight Night main event right there where you have a title. That's way better than these interim titles, which really make things kind of wonky, because you know that the world champion is the world champion, and then you have two minor champions that are there. So, like, Gustafsson, you know, Gustafsson's a legit fighter. He's a continental champion. You know Manawa as a serious contender. You put him as a fight night. That's a fight night main event card that people would tune in to see, especially when you put a belt on the line.
I can see it, and I'm probably going to hear people coming from the other side where they're going to say that this is what killed boxing, all these belts, and some of them don't even mean anything. Well, the thing about the UFC is they're under one umbrella, and the UFC can force them to fight one another, and they will fight one another. That's the main difference, and I would like to see it. It just has to be executed properly, or else you're going to have title belts and divisions held up, kind of like how we saw in boxing.
Well, the problem is, the big difference is, when you look at boxing, it's like the WBA, the WBC, the IBF, the WBO, and you can have six world heavyweight champions. And then you have, you know, the North American champion, the European champion, and then you even have minor titles in there. So if you wanted every title, it's like 10 titles. I'm saying each division would have, you know, a world champion where there's only one world champion, and then you would have two minor titles that are just for just two regional titles, which are definitely lower than, you know what I mean? Like use an example. You do not want a situation where Wonder Boy is fighting Tyron Woodley again for the title, but you could easily have Wonder Boy versus whomever, and have Wonder Boy as the American champion. You know, he has a title, he gets to defend his title, but he's not up for a world title now. Right now.
I see where you're coming from, and this is maybe something that you can answer as you watched it from the wrestling point of view when you were growing up. How did they handle, like, fighter pay? Like, how in WWE there was regional champions? How did those fighters get paid? How did it compare to the world champions? How did it affect their careers and things along those lines? Was there a path to success in that?
Yeah,
it would be,
and you know, this is just me on my little imaginary way. I would like to see the UFC do this instead of putting in, you know, instead of putting in interim titles, which really does muddy up the water. But you look at, as far as pay goes, the highest paid goes the world champion. Then you would have the regional titles. They get paid a lot less than the world heavyweight champion. You put those regional guys, they would headline the Fight Pass cards, the UFC Fight Nights type cards. They don't get paid. They get a bump in pay, you know. So if you were just Jimmy Manawa fighting Corey Anderson again, you know, there's no, you know, you get your regular pay. But if you were Jimmy Manawa and you're fighting someone else and you're defending your continental title, that would be a way that you can get your headline in a card, you're defending your title. That's a little bump in pay, but you're still not world champion caliber. And if you defend the title a number of times, you can fight for the world title. If you win the world title, you vacate that title and they put the strap on someone else.
Yeah, well, there might be a potential issue there, because sometimes we have these interim titles and
no, you'd have to do away. You would have to do away interim titles altogether. That was my excuse for getting rid of them.
Say that again.
That was my reason. My reasoning behind that is that way you get rid. The reason why the UFC, I feel like the UFC is putting these interim titles on, is because the champ is held up with injury, or like Conor McGregor doing his thing, and the division is on hold. Well, if you have a fighter that's on hold, let's say, you know, because of whatever reason, you know, there's not enough titles to go around for all the events, especially when you got a couple of titles on hold. But if you have all these extra regional titles, then you wouldn't have a card like last weekend's. You would have, you know, the last weekend's card, which is the longest card in history. It was the most boring card in history as well. but you would it would add a little extra spice if you put two champions on there. You know, when
I would like that.
You know, if let's say Fabricio was defending his American title on the UFC Fight Night this past weekend, it would make that fight a lot more interesting than if it was as a main event instead, you know, and then you put another, and there's another champion fight on there, putting two titles on up there. Then also some of your bigger events, like 219, they're trying to get another champion on there. And a lot of the main, a lot of the pay-per-view events get hurt when you put three champions on a card, because then you have, you know, not enough champs to go around. Now you have a situation where you would have more champs and it would add more spice to the fight night cards, the fight pass cards, and you can put more titles on the line on your pay-per-view.
All right, Dana, take the call. He's he's accepting offers right now. Just send the contract through and we'll talk about it. He might have to negotiate that I have his partner. But we'll see.
And if you had Alexander Gustafsson, the Continental Champion, getting a shot at the world's heavyweight title, which would be Daniel Cormier, that would add a little bit more of a super fight feel to it as well.
I just shoot him a call and send the contract through.
All right.
We'll be ready.
And, you know, yes, we got a little off the beaten path, but I've been wanting to bring that subject up for a little while because I hate these interim titles. So we're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the news about Chris Cyborg signing her new contract and her fight with Holly Holm that's coming up. Stay tuned and we'll be right back.
This is your ultimate stop for everything sports. The Golden State Media Concepts Sports Podcast. Should I say more? From the NFL, MLB, the NBA, to MMA, it's all in here. The Golden State Media Concepts Sports Podcast. Listen now.
All right, and we are back, and we are about to cover what's been going on with Chris Cyborg and the announcement of Chris Cyborg's new contract and the fact that she has just agreed to fight Holly Holm. But before we do this, I want to Will has been with us on air with us. Say hi, Will.
Hi.
Never say hi to me like that ever again in life.
Hard.
And the very sweet but extremely tough, we also have Sarah.
Now I can't even say hi. I'm just laughing at you.
You're quietly strong.
I was going to say hi, but then I was laughing too hard.
Yeah. So we got Will, Sarah, and myself, and we are going to talk about Chris Cyborg and Holly Holm. And first off, was any of you guys surprised that they signed this contract?
Not really. I mean, they need to do something, and that division, I mean, if they're going to do anything with that division, they have to figure something out. So right now it's like Cyborg's the only person in that division, so they better do something with her and they better figure out what's going on with her contract.
What about you, Will?
I'm not surprised, but it seems like the division is as thin as any division has ever been.
Okay. The reason why I'm surprised is the contract that they gave. It sounds like it's only like 15 months. Don't quote me on it. It's a very short period. It's like it's not like a 2-year contract or
no, you're right. It's 15 months.
It's 15 months,
with the possibility of four fights.
Yes. four fights or 15 months, and then she's a free agent, but she also has that champions clause that all UFC fighters have, is a champion clause. Were you surprised that they only made it a four-fight deal for 15 months, Will?
No, this is the cyborg experiment era. We're going to see how it plays out, and I think that's what the UFC is doing. And to me, it's rightfully so, because they're seeing how little and thin this division is attracting in terms of excitement. So I think that's what's happening here.
Now, you know, and I agree with you on that one. My big problem is it is clear they're not 100% committed to Cyborg as of yet. It's kind of a wait and see situation but you still have the greatest women's mixed martial arts fighter in history. Now, the next thing is, let's talk about the fight. There was a lot of things being held up with this fight, and I thought this fight was dead. And now it is going to happen now. I'm going to start with, who wants to go first, either you or Will? How you think this fight's going to go, and who do you think is going to win?
Oh, go ahead, Will.
All right, so I see this fight as being a mauling. I think Cyborg.
I was shocked you said mauling,
Holly. And I just don't see. I don't see Holly being able to handle her pressure. She didn't look very impressive against Besh Kohea, and that was Besh Kohea. This Cyborg is another level to this game. She's got the weight advantage. She's got the size advantage. It's not. To me, it's not going to be pretty.
Interesting. So
okay,
you,
so I'm going to say you need to go next because you have like the opposite opinion.
Okay, so then Sarah's directing me. Will, okay, this is not like the Tanya Evinger thing where I was just making a statement because you know I love Tanya and that's my little man crush, or platonic crush. That wouldn't be a man crush. That would be more of a platonic crush on Tanya Evinger. This is a straight-up take. Will, Sarah, I have, and I'm going to use the old WWE moniker here. The Legend Killer is going to rear her ugly head again. Not saying that Holly's ugly, just saying that Chrissy Martley was the most dangerous woman boxer in the world. Holly stopped her. Ronda Rousey was the most feared UFC fighter. Holly stopped her. Chris Cyborg is considered the greatest women's fighter ever and the most dangerous women's fighter ever. And Holly is going to stop her. And the reason why Holly is going to stop her, Will and Sarah, is this. Cyborg is made perfect for Holly Holm. Holly is a counterpuncher. If you make Holly come to you, kind of like way Misha Tate, Holly is very, very vulnerable. But if you come charging at her like a raging bull, just the way Ronda Rousey did, it is textbook what Holly wants. Holly wants that more than anything. She is a counterpuncher. Second thing is, Holly is a boxer. And Holly has some of the best footwork in boxing. She has some of the best footwork in MMA as well. She's going to be able to, one, with her footwork, keep Cyborg off of her. She's not going to get ran over like a lot of her opponents. Second thing is, Holly can shoot for angles and not take a lot of punishment, unlike everyone else. Holly can keep her distance and counter off of the aggression that Cyborg has, hit her with angles, and Holly can knock out a man with that head kick of hers. And she has caught many, many fighters. I always go back to, like, Rashard Evans talking about him sparring with her, and he wasn't paying attention, and she caught him with that head kick. That head kick is dangerous. I see, and this is not my heart. Styles make fight. I got Holly winning this straight cold. As a matter of fact, I'm willing to even put my money where my mouth is on this one. I'm actually going to place a bet on this one. This is going to be an upset. Will, do you think I'm crazy? And Sarah, how crazy am I? You want to go first, Sarah?
I don't think you're crazy. I see where you're coming from, and I think if Holly can get past that first initial rush that Cyborg tends to do, that it's going to be a pretty evenly matched fight, that they are going to be that she's going to be able to stand up against what Cyborg brings. I don't have the total level of confidence that you do that Holly's going to nail her with that head kick, but if she does, I mean, it's definitely a possibility. Now, for me, you know that I always come at these things with a little bit of not ever wanting anybody to lose, but
okay.
I like them both, and I feel like they both have so much riding on this fight, and I just, you know, it's hard for me because they do have so much. You know, Holly lost 3 in a row, and then she won, and she kind of came back a little bit, but she's still on shaky ground. Cyborg is in this kind of wait-and-see holding pattern with the UFC, where she's in the UFC, but she's not really being that well supported by the UFC. So I want good things for both of them, dang it.
Well, not everybody gets fruit cup here, so no.
I want there's fruit a winner cup for everyone, loser. Darn it.
Will, hit me. What's your thoughts?
I can see where it's coming from. I just don't see it happening because in a lot of the fights that I've seen, Holly is just so timid, and she does have the power to knock anybody out. It's just that Cyborg is going to be very patient yet aggressive with her. And when she crowds her space and she's pressuring her up against the fence, I don't see Holly Holm throwing that kick. I don't see her throwing her punches right. I don't see that happening. And I kind of saw how the fight would play out in a sense with her fight against Jermaine Duranemi. I think it's going to be similar to that fight in terms of where the fighters are going to be in the cage, in the orientation of the cage. It's just that Cyborg is another level. And I don't think that she's going to be able to handle it. And I think Jermaine knew that, and that's why she kind of dropped out of that division.
Now, this one, like when you talk about Holly being a little timid, I agree. Holly, this is the reason why I don't make like, and I'm a big fan of both of these ladies, but I don't say Holly's the greatest fighter ever lived or anything like that. But I do say that the reason why Holly is naturally a timid fighter, meaning she wants you to come at her. And every single time every time, even boxing, all the way to her MMA career, whenever you have an aggressive fighter that comes at Holly, that's when Holly is at her best. Her style is not to lead the show, not to barrel you over. That's why she's not so as spectacular as some fighters. She wants you to come at her, and then she catches you. And so that's why I think in this particular case, just the style makes fights. It's kind of crazy that I'm picking against Cyborg, but I just don't see it. What's your thoughts, Will?
I guess I'll be putting money on the opposite end. We can make a bet.
I will officiate this bet and not participate in it. I am Switzerland.
Oh no, I'm definitely willing to take a bet on this one.
I will be the one that monitors this bet for you.
Are we going to put some stakes on this one, Will? What do you want to bet on this one?
Actual stakes?
Yeah. Wait. What's the over under for you?
I'm saying, well, Cyborg's going to be the huge favorite, so I got to get some. I got to get some. I got to
make it worth your while, right?
Yes. Let's see. What are we gonna put on this? I have no clue. We'll have to think about that. But I'm dead serious. This is not me just being a fan of Tonya Evinger. I just think this is the fight that matches up well. Like with Cyborg and Gina Carano, you had two fighters that were always that push forward. You had with her and Tonya Evinger. Tonya Evinger is a fighter that was kind of, you know, come at you first. And Tonya had to fight a fight that wasn't her normal game. Holly's going to be happy moving. and hopping around and moving and moving and jabbing and keeping her at a distance and not getting caught on the cage. And you don't see a lot of people catching Holly on the cage. So that's why I just think it's going to be an interesting one. Anyone else has any more, any other thoughts on this before we wrap this one?
Well, it's a little bit over a month away, so we'll be talking about our wager pretty soon.
You know what? We got to think about this one because I'm thinking we have to put something real. It's crazy. I really look forward to doing seeing this fight because I'm expecting a total upset.
And don't forget, you're going to have to do it before our buddy Will goes on his whirlwind adventure. Because
I know,
you know,
before he goes to Asia. Yeah. So will you be? Are you going to be in the? You'll be in the U.S. during that fight, or will you be in Asia at that time?
Well, it's I'm actually leaving for Asia on the 15th. Of January. This fight's going to be the New Year's card, so I'll be around.
All right.
Okay.
So looking forward, we're gonna put some interesting stakes on this one.
See, now if Will loses, he can run away to Asia. If you lose, you're just, you know, stuck here.
I know. Also, before we wrap this one up, one other thing is Kat Zingano is actually just going to change the subject to another female fighter. In that division, and picking of someone that wants to fight Cyborg, is that Kat Zingano will be coming back. I think at the beginning of next year.
She's fighting against Caitlin Vieira on March 3rd at UFC 222.
Dang, Will, you're good to have around.
Why do you think I have Will around?
Well, I know that, but I just like to give him props.
He's my Stockton connection.
I don't know what to say to that. I mean, do you need a Stockton connection?
Yes, I do. Who else is going to introduce me and give me the introduction with the Diaz brothers and
true story
and all and the Gracie. That's Will.
That's Will. Okay.
Okay. So
hopefully, I'm not connecting you with anything else.
Yeah, that's about all I want to be connected with Stockton. No offense. Okay. So with Kat coming back, do you think that she can make a run at either the bantamweight title or the featherweight title?
I think she can, but it's been so long since we've seen her. I mean,
she lost to Juliana Pena, and then I haven't heard from her since. I guess she had some issues or some things going on. I don't want to speculate on that one, but
right. Then you have to. There's the whole concept of ring rust and just being out for so long and then coming back to a division that really has changed since she left.
Totally,
I mean,
changed.
It's hugely different than when she left. So I can't even fully speculate on, because I haven't seen her. So
yeah,
I don't know.
It's just nice to see her back in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
Were you ever a big fan of Kat Zingano, Will?
I was a huge fan of her. I think that she has more heart than probably 95% of fighters out there. And it's just that the stakes didn't match up with her, and she really took a fall with that Ronda Rousey fight. She was overly emotional with that, but I can never question her heart and her fighting spirit.
All right. Mm-hmm. That is a good way to wrap this one up. Is there any, before I left, anyone else have anything else? You want to talk about Paige VanZant? Anything else before we? And Paige is going to be having her first I always get flyweight and featherweight mixed up because it's the
F alliteration.
Yes. Which one is it, Will? Above strawweight.
It's going to be flyweight.
Paige is going to be making her flyweight debut coming up soon as well. So that's something else to keep a lookout.
We're going to have to talk about that when we got it.
We'll be talking about that on the women's mixed martial arts show in the next week or so. So with that, we're going to wrap this portion up. And then when we come back, Will will hit me with a few other interesting topics.
Well, I'm going to duck out and let you two talk about your interesting topics. I just like to come in and talk about the girls. But I do want to say happy Thanksgiving to you and to Will and to all of our listeners. Go out there and eat your weight in pie.
I like that's a good way to end your segment on this one.
Sarah out.
All right. Have a good one. And we'll be right back.
Check out the show built around the women of MMA. From the UFC, Invicta FC, Bellator, and ONE Championship. We got the fights covered. It's the Golden State Media Concepts Women's MMA Podcast. The latest news of upcoming fights, discussions of previous matches. Join us as we talk to and about the biggest names in women's mixed martial arts, past, present, and future. When it's the women's fight game, you know where to listen to the Golden State Media Concepts Women's MMA Podcast.
All right, and we're back here. We just finished wrapping up talking about Holly Holm and Chris Cyborg and how Will and I do not agree on the outcome, in which we're going to have some type of bet because I am taking Holly Holm. Will is taking Chris Cyborg. And if anyone that's listening to the show, I'm a big Cyborg fan. I just think this is a great matchup. But Will's going with the sure thing, and so I respect that. So, Will, you have been the one who's been controlling what we're going to talk about. What are we going to talk about for our last segment here?
All right, let's talk about something that you kind of alluded to before, kind of the UFC 219 event in terms of what led to the UFC trying to find another champion on this card. And let's go with the whole Conor McGregor situation and what happened in the past few weeks.
All right. Clarify a little bit, or I'll let you go first.
Well, it was actually related to Bellator. Have you seen?
I've definitely seen that whole situation, yes.
What are your thoughts on it?
Okay. Here's my thing. I am going to defend Conor McGregor on this one. Because I watched this event, and I seriously thought the referee had stopped the fight. Turned out the referee hadn't stopped the fight at all, and that the fight was still going on when Conor McGregor jumped into the ring. But when I watched it, I had no clue that the referee had not stopped the fight, and that Conor had jumped in the ring. And so Conor was thinking, in my opinion, that the fight was over and he was celebrating and the referee is trying to get him out of the ring. And it turned into a really bad situation. I think Conor McGregor's apology was kind of lame. It's one of those things where, you know, the punishment that Conor McGregor has gotten, which is that he was going to be fighting that he's not going to be allowed to fight on the last card of the year. Well, Conor was never going to fight on that card in the first place. So, you know, that's kind of my take. What did you think when you saw this?
Well, I was paying attention to everything and kind of just to set the environment of what was happening during the event. Was the crowd was loud. They were fighting and they were cheering for who is the Charlie, his last name is losing me right now. Charlie Ward,
yes.
Was fighting, and that is Conor's training partner and one of his good friends
and bodyguard.
And they were in a very pro Charlie Ward environment. And and another thing that I have to say is Mark Goddard is one of the best referees in the game. He is pretty on point with most of his calls in terms of stopping the fight, warning fighters, and just generally looking after fighter safety. And I've been paying attention to what he's been releasing on social media and kind of his explanation of the event. So what he said is that as he was refereeing the event, obviously Charlie Ward was putting on some punishment against his opponent, and Mark Gunter couldn't hear the bell ring, so he kind of jumped the gun and thought that the bell had rung when he beat it by a few seconds or a second or so. And he didn't really have an intention of stopping the fight at that moment, even though it was really close to that. He was more stopping it for the round ending. And maybe they need to have some type of notification where it's more than a bell or something, so that when it gets to those crazy environments, the referees can hear everything and they're not swayed by anything that the crowd does. But that's another conversation. So he looks to stop it in terms of ending the round so that there's no more punches thrown. Turns out he stopped it too early. Connor and everyone thinks that the fight is stopped. So they jump in the cage and kind of mayhem ensues. And then as Mark Goddard is trying to usher everyone out of the cage, since he's under the impression that the fight is still going, that's when Connor takes offense and there's insults thrown, pushes thrown around, and kind of the mayhem breaks loose. And
slap of an
official. I can't really see. They're slapping an official. I can see both sides of this argument, and really the only way that I could have seen something like this prevented would be if Mark Goddard had been signaled that the round ended, because it's just hard to operate in that high pressure environment, and it's hard being a referee. I mean, I've thought about being a referee sometimes, but and it's a pressure situation there, because these fighters' livelihood are decided by your actions to a lot of degrees, whether you take away points, whether you call fights off a little bit too early or too late. They're dealing with their own pressure situation there too. So I can't really blame Connor for defending kind of his actions and doing that. I thought the apology was a little bit lame myself. But I think that it could have been handled better by the commission and kind of the event planners there. But other than that, I didn't see him making such a quick turnaround either, especially considering that Ferguson probably wouldn't have been ready or willing to do that. But
all right, okay. I was going to give you. Do you want to hear what I think should be done?
Sure.
I'm just taking what the referee said, and I agree with, you know, I understand, and agree with that. That's kind of, you know, referee, that was his decision. But when you look at his decision and what happened, the official decision is winner by TKO Charlie Ward. That's crap. The referee clearly states that the round was not over and someone jumped in the ring. That was Conor McGregor. If he wasn't going to wave the fight off, he thought the round had ended, then even if he stopped it early or not, Conor McGregor came in the ring, the proper judgment would be a disqualification by Charlie Ward, and Redman should be the winner by disqualification, not Charlie Ward winner by TKO, because the referee has stated automatically that he was not stopping the fight. He stopped it because he thought the bell had sounded, and so he stopped it early. So Conor McGregor comes in the ring. How is John Redman not awarded the victory by disqualification? Do you understand where I'm coming from on that one?
I get where you're coming from. It's just difficult to go in that situation because we kind of see the end was coming for Redman.
Yes,
that doesn't justify Connor's actions.
But so, if someone jumped in the ring on Charlie Ward's behalf, you don't reward, you don't say, okay, the fight's over and Charlie Ward is the winner by TKO. If the referee was never going to stop it, it would be the fight has been, someone's come in the ring, it's a disqualification, right?
I mean, yeah, I think that's in the rule books.
But if you look at the official decision, and the referee has clearly said he was not going to stop the fight, but if I'm looking on the Bellator website right now, Charlie Ward wins by TKO. How can that be a TKO if the referee has made a statement that he was never going to stop the fight and he stopped it for being between because he thought the round was over, not because the fighter couldn't continue. So how does Charlie Ward get the decision? What do you
well, the thing is,
you weren't expecting this one.
It's also kind of taking the events as a whole interpretation as well, because what Goddard said was when he was about to stop, when he was getting everyone out of the cage and trying to regain order in the cage, he talked to the doctor who was examining Redmond, and the doctor said that he was not fit to continue. And that, I take that more with more weight and more grain to the fight decision. Like if Redmond was not able to continue and he was not fit to continue because of the beating that he just suffered, then I would have to say it's a doctor stoppage more so than a disqualification.
But which one came first? If you go back and watch the tape, Conor McGregor jumps in there immediately, and then they have to handle Conor McGregor. Conor McGregor wants to kind of look like he wants to fight the referee. He's in the referee's face. Conor McGregor trips over the fighter, and then the doctor comes in and looks at Redmond and then says he's not able to continue. But the Conor McGregor stuff clearly happened before that.
Well, I'd take the beating that Charlie Ward put on Redmond before anything, and I think that was more.
Now it was a thorough beating.
A faster stop.
It was definitely. No, I agree with you that it was a thorough beating, and that's why I thought the fight was stopped. I thought this fight was stopped because of that. But if you look at take the referee by his words, he stopped the fight early. The fight was continuing. Someone jumped in the ring. That's why I say that the decision should be reversed. And it should be a stoppage by disqualification, or there should be a no contest in there. Something needs to be done on this one. I don't, or do you think I'm way off base? And it's okay if you do.
I think punishments should be doled out.
But you can't punish Connor.
Well, maybe you punish Ward a little bit, but since he is part of his entourage and part, not even part of his corner, but part of his entourage. But I don't feel that takes away from the result of the fight. I think Charlie won that fight.
And Charlie was definitely a better man. I would agree with you on that one.
Yeah, so it's hard for me to, like, if Charlie was getting beaten and he landed one, like, it was not even close to getting stops, but then this mayhem ensued and it was rolled a TKO for him, then I would have to say that's not right. But we kind of knew the result was coming. I've seen stoppages that were earlier than what Redmond went through. So I give him the benefit of the doubt. I give him the win. But it's tough. Maybe what needs to happen is that rules need to be changed and adjustments need to be made for referee, fighter, doctor safety, all these different things.
Now, let me ask you another question with this. Should there be some type of rule that's universal across the board with all organizations that – because let's say at this fight coming up here with Gastelum and Michael Bisping. This fight is going on, and King Mo just jumps in the middle of the ring and just starts wailing on Michael Bisping and disrupts the fight. There's no way to really punish a guy for doing that, or it could be any Bellator fighter or some Alaskan Fighting Championship guy jumps in the ring. There's no governing body that can actually suspend a guy for going into another event other than just having him arrested for trespassing. Am I right?
Well, you can arrest him and then ban him from any future events, and that could be a punishment that makes them not want to do that ever again.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, with this whole situation, I was just looking at that. I was kind of like surprised that there's really nothing. There's no real consequences. You know, it's the benefit. Bellator was never going. You know, Bellator is happy about this because you took a card that was very, very lackluster, and it's going to be one of their biggest cards of the year as far as it's on tape delay and everything. And it got almost a million views because everyone heard about Conor McGregor jumping in the ring and the melee that happened. It became one of their biggest events of the year. So they weren't upset, but I'm just saying, There needs to be something in place to make sure that stuff like this doesn't happen between organizations.
Yeah, but then there's also the factor that, you know how some wrestling promotions are too, where this guy from another organization comes in and he starts his whole rivalry or even like a potential fight, you know? And I don't think that like Bellator is, they don't mind too much about this whole incident because it's...
Oh no, they benefited from this one. They made out.
Yeah, so like, whatever creates that controversy, to me, it's fine because I've seen something. We watched. Were you ever watching that Nick Diaz versus KJ Nunes event at all?
No, I don't.
No. It was Dan. It was actually Dan Henderson versus Jake Shields in Strikeforce.
Okay, I was never a big Strikeforce guy, so that's why I don't know this one.
So Dan Henderson, that's an interesting fight too. You should watch it. But basically, what happened was Dan Henderson laid an absolute mauling on Jake Shields in the first round, and then Jake Shields rallies back in the next four rounds, and beats him unanimously. And then after the fight, Jake Shields is doing his press conference, his little interview, and then out of nowhere, Jason Mayhem Miller comes out and he starts screaming that he wants to fight next. And then a whole brawl breaks loose because Nick and Nate Diaz start beating the crap out of everybody and Jason Miller. And at this time, they weren't even, at least Nate Diaz wasn't even part of the Strikeforce organization. So it was him and his brother who was part of it, but it was them that were playing the part, and I don't think that they've had ratings that good ever since that happened.
So you're saying this is a great way to boost up ratings then?
This is a promotional thing, because the UFC is a very interesting organization where you have, it's the medley between sport and entertainment.
Okay.
And it's like a real medley.
It's definitely becoming
that way. It kind of blurs the line a lot of times.
And so are you saying that you think this was scripted then? Is that what you're implying?
No, I'm not saying that it's scripted.
Oh, okay.
But I'm saying that the sport and the organizations benefit from this. I'm sure there should be some penalties. I wouldn't say that there should be like a blanket penalty that isn't adjusted for whatever organization and whatnot. But there needs to be some type of punitive measure to prevent it from happening, from dissuade it from happening. But I don't see anybody really losing on this other than Redman, who was going to lose anyways.
All right. Now, before we wrap things up for the day, because we're at our limit here, is there anything else that you want to cover? And I may have one other thing I just want to get your take on. But is there any other thing that you want to cover before we wrap up the day's show?
Other than me being pretty excited for that UFC 219 card, since they're doing a really good job of solidifying the supporting cast for it with some really big fights like Khabib versus Edson Barboza, Jimmy Rivera now stepping in place, and fighting John Lineker, who is subbing in for Dominic Cruz. You got Cynthia Calvillo versus Carla Esparza, and a whole lot of other fights that we'll probably be talking about pretty soon here. So I'm really excited for that.
What I'm excited about is, and I'm not necessarily excited, but I'm looking forward to seeing what happens, is the John Jones doping allegations, it comes to a head this next week, right?
Well, actually, that was another thing is that's actually been pushed back to February.
Oh, that's right. It was pushed back to February. That's right. You know what? I'm starting to think that John Jones is not going to get a 4-year ban. I told you about this. I saw a thing where they tested a bunch of the GNC supplements, and there was 42 supplements that had that steroid in there, and that was just for GNC. There was like 42 supplements, and only 10 were banned by USADA. So there was 32 items that you could have bought at GNC that you thought would have been safe going by USADA that you would have had, that you would have gotten that product. What's your thoughts on that?
That's not fair to me, but what's also not fair is fighters getting multiple offenses for drug allegations and performance enhancing allegations. So it's tough.
And it comes right back to, once again, that I think the UFC should come up with their own line of supplements that are UFC branded supplements that fighters get directly from the UFC that has been tested and proven to be clean, so that, you know, here's your protein, here's your creatine, here's your B12, here's everything you need to be a fighter. You take this stuff, everybody's on the same line, you know. But if you go outside of the UFC branded materials, you are on your own. What do you agree that that's probably the best solution?
I totally agree. I mean, they already cover medical costs. Why don't they just deal with any potential doping and whatnot with that? And if they do find that they dope, then there's no one to blame other than the fighter themselves.
Right, because
it's kind of like a foolproof idea.
Then you just get let's look at creatine, because creatine is one of those supplements that a lot of things sometimes end up in. But if you had a UFC-branded creatine that's been tested before it's shipped out to the fighters, it's tested and then shipped to all the UFC fighters, the protein powder. It's been tested and shipped to all the fighters. So everyone gets all their supplements, and then if you take anything outside of that, then it's at your own risk. Then no one could get busted for something. You know, they all know what they can take. I think that's the safest way to solve this problem. And I don't think, you know, you could actually get a sponsorship deal where, you know, one of the supplement companies would be happy to be the official, you know, supplement of the UFC, and they would be able to test it and send it out. It wouldn't even cost you. I don't think it would cost the UFC any money at all. I think they'd make money off of it.
Yeah, I mean, it does save them a lot of time with having to deal with finding out who is taking what and whatnot. I mean, if you're all taking the same things, which is kind of how it should be theoretically, if it's an equal playing field, then you should have nothing to worry about as a fighter. You should welcome it, and you should just let the skills do the talking because you've already done the work on your end.
Yeah, so everybody is on the same playing field. There's no chance of it's like, oops, I accidentally took the wrong thing. No, we're all taking the same stuff. Did you take the stuff from your shipment from the UFC? No, I took this other stuff from Vitamin Shop. Well, you're tough. Too late. Too bad. You didn't take a UFC branded product. You are on your own. Then I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I agree with you.
All right, Will. With that one, we're wrapping things up. That's our final take for the night. Once again, I'm Tate, and my good friend Will over in Stockton. Thank you for joining me again, Will. And we'll be working on what kind of bet we're gonna have for that Cyborg Holly Holm fight. And for everyone who listened, to all have a good night.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts MMA Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. From movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.